Hi, this is Nicole Hemsoth, editor of HPC Wire, here with today's edition of Soundbite, our daily interview series featuring researchers, thought leaders, and newsmakers in the world of high-performance computing. Today we'll be talking about HPC network performance with Brian Tierney, a staff scientist and group leader of the ESNet Advanced Network Technologies Group at Berkeley National Lab. Brian also leads ESNet's 100 gigabit network testbed project. We'll talk about that as well as some milestones with the Perf Sonar project, which he's helping to drive. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Nicole.
So you have a long history in network performance technologies. I know that you were one of the designers of, or the designer of the NetLogger toolkit, in addition to several other packages. Can you talk about what got you interested in this and what some of the key milestones for you were personally, research-wise?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I've been at Berkeley National Lab for coming up on 25 years now, and many of the early projects I worked on were in the area of distributed computing and trying to move data as quickly as possible across wide area networks. Back then, that was a really fast network, was 45 megabits per second, of course. And it was always a struggle to utilize the networks to their full potential due to various host issues and protocol issues and so forth. So I've been sort of working in this space for a long time.
Can you tell us a little bit about NetLogger? What was that and how has it evolved? Is it still something that's used?
I don't think, NetLogger was sort of two things. It was both a concept and an implementation of the concept. I think the implementation of the concept isn't really used as much anymore. I think it's still being maintained, at least at some level, by Dan Gunter here at Berkeley Lab, but I'm not involved with it anymore. But the basic concept was that for a program to really log all of its I/O activity in a consistent format, in an easy to parse format. So you'd write, you'd wrap all of your system calls, both disk I/O and network I/O, and it enabled one to do some fine-grained debugging on complicated distributed systems and figure out what the interactions were and figure out exactly where the time was being spent. You know, it turned out a lot of time people assumed the network was the bottleneck, where in fact the disk was the bottleneck, or vice versa. And just by actually logging the stuff with the right fidelity, you could figure out what was going on.
Mm-hmm. And what are a lot of users using now to replace that type of tool? What are some of the more sophisticated software programs or tooling required there?
I think in some ways the concepts caught on and people are doing better jobs of logging and benchmarking their programs. In other ways, everything just got faster and they don't care anymore. And there's still probably inefficiencies that people aren't aware of. And if they were using those techniques, they'd be better off. I kind of wished it had caught on more than it did, to be honest.
I see. But you're right, networks certainly have gotten quite a bit faster, especially since when you first started. If you could, give us just a quick overview on what ESNet is. I think a lot of our readers and listeners are familiar, but it might be some helpful background.
Sure. ESNet is the network that connects all of the Department of Energy facilities around the country. There's probably around 9 or 10 big DOE sites and several smaller DOE sites. Most of the big sites either are connected at 100 gigs at this point or will soon be connected at 100 gigabits per second. Our entire backbone is 100 gigabit at this point.
And so what are some of the benefits that you've seen of having that uptick in capability on the network side?
Well, we were definitely getting pretty close to saturating our previous network. Our network traffic has been growing exponentially since ESNet began, so for over 20 years, and we just definitely needed to move to 100 gig in order to keep up with the ever-increasing growth. Right now, we're sort of in a nice position that we do have extra headroom on our network, so it allows us to do lots of interesting testbed activities. And you mentioned that I'm PI of the ESNet 100 gig testbed project. We have a dedicated 100 gig wave between Oakland to Chicago to New York just for the testbed, but we also use parts of our production network to extend the testbed. And for example, the NERSC Supercomputer Center just did a test with us. They were able to get 80 gigabits per second from their data transfer nodes and to our testbed nodes using our production backbone. So, you know, it's nice that right now we have a 100 gig network, only of which 10 to 20 gigs is actually in use, so we can do things up to 80 gigs for these testbed experiments.
Can you describe some of those experiments? What exactly are you trying to figure out?
Well, in the case of NERSC, they just wanted to verify that their GPFS file system fed its back end to the front end of they have five nodes, each of which have two 10 gig interfaces, was able to fully saturate the network and that they can actually push data that fast. So they haven't put these in full production yet, but the initial experiments, which were actually just done last week, show that they should have no problem filling up their 100 gig pipe.
So with all that in mind, how does this lead into another one of your projects, the PERF Sonar project? And that's PERF SONAR.
Right. So PERF as in performance and then sonar. So I was working with a lot of the grid projects in the early 2000s that were trying to do grid computing, and most of them were complaining about network issues. And it was decided that we really needed some tools out there to monitor what the network was actually capable of. So this work started out in the early 2000s, an initial focus on coming up with just some standard protocols so that we could even exchange network data and talk about it. But over the years, it sort of evolved into a tool with two fairly different uses, two different goals. A big one is just to let people know what the network's actually capable of and what the network to their site is actually capable of. So the way it's commonly used is that a campus or a lab will bring up a PerfSonar toolkit node at their campus border, and then you can set up regular testing to other PerfSonar nodes, to other sites of interest, that where your scientists typically transfer data between, for example, a lab and a university. And these tests will run, say, every 4 to 6 hours. You'll just collect data in the background forever. And then you can just go and look and quickly say, oh, well, it looks like I should be able to get 2 gigabits between my campus and that lab based on the PerfSonar results. And if they're not getting that, they know that they need to look into other issues that might be causing the performance problems. It might be that they're using the wrong tool. It might be that their hosts aren't tuned properly. It might be that there's packet loss issues within their campus. But PerfSonar is a really, really good way to at least set a baseline. Most people have no idea what the network might be capable of. They just know it feels slow to them. And by going to the PerfSonar node and seeing what the historical results are, it gives them a starting place. So at the end of 2013, we were excited when we hit our milestone of 1,000 PerfSonar nodes deployed worldwide. It's a pretty large number. And the real value of that is that often now when you are trying to troubleshoot a problem, there's a PerfSonar node on the path on your path of interest along the way that you can run tests to. It used to be that when people would report performance problems to us, we'd have to say, please put up a PerfSonar node here so we can run some tests. But now, as often as not, there's actually a PerfSonar node already there. So it's made it much easier to track down performance problems and troubleshoot them. PerfSonar is really useful for trying to pinpoint the source of the problem. You know, the first step is it's easy to figure out that there is a problem, but it can be much more difficult to figure out where the problem is. And by having PerfSonar nodes at every step along the way, it really simplifies that process.
Mm-hmm. And are they also offered recommendations on how to improve performance? Is this something that has to go to someone to analyze that really understands what some of these faults might mean?
Yeah, so the next step is if things aren't working as fast as the scientists would like, typically then they need to get some experts involved. They need to talk to a network engineer. They need to talk to their local systems admin people. We also here at ESNet run a website, a knowledge base we call it, called fasterdata.es.net. And this website is got tons of information on host tuning, what tools to use, network tuning, and so forth. It's a very, very popular website. It gets somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000 hits a week.
Oh, great.
And it's very heavily used by the community.
Sounds like a good resource. What are some of the most frequent problems at HPC centers when it comes to networks? I realize that's a broad question, but is there something you see over and over that whether or not it's easy to fix is just so common that you kind of sigh every time you see it?
Yeah, there's a couple of them. And in fact, the HPC centers are usually pretty good, to be honest. It's sort of the other end, because it's usually the transfers between an HPC center and a campus cluster back at home someplace for some professor. But the most common ones, one is host tuning still usually needs to be done. The default settings for Linux have gotten a lot better over the years, but still if you're trying to transfer data very far, like all the way across the country or between continents, you definitely need to modify a couple buffer settings, and that's all explained on the Faster Data website. That's probably our most popular single page on the site, is how to mm-hmm. in the Linux system for better performance. And again, the Personar is useful for that, because Personar nodes, of course, are tuned well. So if Personar is able to get this speed, but the scientist is getting a different speed, that's an indication they might want to look at their host tuning.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other issues that pop to mind aside from that one right there that might also be somewhat quick fixes or just a matter of reading and understanding what they need to do?
Yeah, I mean, the other most common issue, unfortunately, isn't necessarily a quick fix. It's often some switch or buffer just doesn't have a switch or router somewhere doesn't have enough buffering configured, that if there are multiple high-speed flows going the same direction at the same time, you really do need a fair amount of buffering. Certain routers, like the a classic example is Cisco 6509, their default buffer sizes aren't optimal for big scientific data flows, and you can just go in and increase them, and then things work much better. Other times, just the hardware intrinsically isn't good enough, and you actually have to go out and buy new hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that's a problem that's all too common, and that the only real solution is spending money.
Well, that is a quick fix, however.
It's
just not the one that anyone wants to have to make. One last question for you, Brian. You've been out at the leading edge of a lot of network technologies and understanding how they operate. Are there any technologies on the horizon? There have been a lot of conversations around things like optical networking and server switch combinations and all of these interesting things. What's captured your imagination the most?
Well, we've spent a lot of time thinking about the role of software-defined networking and how it might play out in our world. There's lots of interesting possibilities there as far as being able to steer traffic flows in a more optimal manner. You can use it potentially for firewall bypass. I mean, that's another big performance issue in our world is trying to send huge scientific data flows through a firewall is almost never a good idea. And we've been working to try to advocate something we call the science DMZ model, where people put up data transfer servers outside of their firewall and protect them with other mechanisms. But software-defined networking provides another way to attack that problem, that you can dynamically bypass your firewall for these sorts of traffic.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, software-defined networking has a lot of airplay on the enterprise IT and technology spectrum, but yeah, you don't hear too much about it in HPC, and so it's that firewall problem, or is it something bigger than that?
That's just one example, actually. I mean, another thing we've been thinking about is using software-defined networking to replicate data. If you have a big climate data set, for example, that you want to replicate in three or four places around the world, you can send all that data three or four times, or you could potentially send it once and have the network copy it at a location in the network that's a little bit more efficient. So that's another idea we're playing with. But it's all fairly early on. I think we'll see what happens in the software-defined network space. I think a lot of the vendors are still trying to figure out exactly what they're doing in that space.
Right. As they are in all of the different spaces in HPC right now, there's a lot of change and transition happening. Well, Brian, we'll check in again with you, especially on the 100 gigabit network testbed project. I think that's of a lot of interest to our readers and listeners. Thanks a lot for your time today.
Sure. Thank you very much.